Hello everybody, my name is Ron, and this is Ron's Gadget Talk for Thursday, 5th of August, 2021. Yes, we couldn't get a Tuesday episode out as soon as we can, because I think I procrastinated quite a lot, and I had classes later on in the day, doing online classes. It's not easy, honestly, but hey, we got a Thursday episode. I probably will try to make up with it we'll try to make up for this, hopefully with a Saturday bonus episode. Do look out for that one. If I can't do it, then I'll let you know on Twitter. Obviously, if you want to know whether I'm having another episode or not, or I am continuing to drop the podcast or taking a break, do follow me on Twitter. I'm at @_mountain99. Also on Instagram and TikTok, kind of. I don't know how they believe it. Oh, well. This past week, the momentum of new devices coming hasn't really stopped, as you could say that. And we have plenty of things to talk about, including all new Pixel phones that are going to be coming later this fall. And we have a first look at the Pixel 6 series, as we'll call it, in that sense. So we're going to talk about under-display cameras, and now there's the cheapest EV in the United States. Which one is it? This will surprise you. Stick around till the end. We're going to talk about that too. All right, let's get rolling, shall we? If it can't stop leaking, you might as well talk about it. Kind of sounds like, if you can't beat them, you might as well join them. That's kind of been the mantra for Google in talking about their new Pixel phones this past week. Google posted a blog post and they've kind of announced that the Pixel 6 and a Pixel 6 Pro is coming, and it will feature their first custom processor. Now, interestingly, one thing we need to note is the phone's name. So we're getting two Pixel phones. There's no 6A, but we're getting two Pixel phones this year, the 6 and the 6 Pro. Now, you will notice something. The Pro would normally be the bigger brother of the Pixel 6, and it used to be called the Pixel 6 XL, and now we have the Pro. I'm sure Google's trying to adopt the market standard. XL doesn't mean a whole lot anymore. Phones are just equally as big as they are, you know, in terms of screen size. So Pro would probably mean to say that it has some advanced cameras and functionality. Now, interesting enough, Google has not really talked in depth about the Pixel phones or what features it has or what functionality it will offer that's exclusive to Pixel. Doesn't go on in depth about it. It's just talked about a few extra things that I'm sure it would have taken another hour of the keynote. So seems like Google has talked about it today already, and that's interesting to say the least. Now, one thing we do know is the look of the Pixel 6 and 6 Pro and the processor in question. But we gotta talk about the design though. The Pixel 6 has this unique design. It's a typical Pixel. There are two finishes. So the Pro has a light polished aluminium frame, for example, and a 6 has a matte aluminium finish, as I'll like to say. So they're using aluminium now at the back and has a matte finish to make it feel good. Now, we've seen renders of the Pixel 6 Pro before and the 6. They were looking a little ugly with the big, fat robot eyes, I would say. The big RoboCop camera cutout. This got to be one of the most interesting designs of a phone of 2021. There is the S21 series. There is the Galaxy Z Fold 3. The Z Flip 3 is interesting, in my own opinion. That's a bit of an upgrade for design. The Z Fold 3 looks the same as the previous one. The Mi 11 Ultra has had very fascinating design in the back with big camera cutouts and a little display at the back. Whereas this is quite fascinating. Now, compared to the leaks or renders, the leaked renders that made it look a little horrible, the Google's renders here are a little bit nicer, typical Google style, a two-tone gradient finish, matte finish, and I think that's wonderful, and there's a cutout in the middle, and it's a quite fascinating design that I think we have not seen on phones. It harkens back to the S10 days with the camera cutout in the middle instead of being on a side. I don't know how Google will play around with having the camera in the middle and processors being around it, but I'm sure they'll make it work. We'll only know more about this phone during the fall event that Google's going to be doing. That's most likely during October. So that's interesting nonetheless. Aside from that, one thing that I think we're surprised to know is Google has created its own processor. It's the first it's its first custom chip for the Pixel phones. Now, Google's argument for their new processor, I'll say what it's called. It's the Tensor chip, which is a custom CPU ARM chip that Google has designed. Now, we did know for a long time that Google will move from using Snapdragon chips to its own custom processors, and allow them to do more, give them more control of the hardware, so the software is phenomenal. But interestingly enough, it's ARM powered, that's important. Now, their argument is that it's basically all about making it AI optimized. Basically, AI is a big part of Google Pixel's experience. The cameras utilize AI. There's the computational photography. There's the apps and functionality like live translate and live subtitles. And you need to run that incredibly quickly. You know, it needs to run in a snap. And so the Tensor chip is built to be running incredibly fast. It'd be optimized for AI-driven tasks primarily. But on top of that, you have the Pixel, the Titan M2 security core, interestingly, and the security core on the Tensor chip. And this means that Google's phones will have good security encryption, so it won't get hacked in that easily. Now, interestingly enough, if you talk about the Tensor chip, it is the name especially, it's based off Tensor Core, which is Google's AI sort of programming language that they have, interestingly enough. Now, interestingly, you'll be sitting there thinking, wait, Google has a Tensor chip already for their Pixel phones? How are they able to make this? I mean, isn't there a chip shortage out there? I mean, Google, I mean, what's up with them? So, according to 9to5 Google, according to Nikkei, they're claiming that Samsung will be producing the Tensor chip, which apparently is being built on a 5-nanometer process. So it's similar to the Snapdragon 888 in terms of die composition. So, but the thing will be, but the Tensor chip, as mentioned officially by Google now, is different in that it'll be more optimized for AI, which is what Google has talked about. So it'll be more optimized for machine learning tasks that we need on phones, you know, live translate, live captions, live, you know, you get the point, and for a smoother UI experience. And speaking of which, Google has claimed that the Pixel 6 will obviously come with stock Android, will come with a Material U design. This is sort of the third generation of the Material Design functionality that they've had, and offers more buttery smooth UI in that sense, as I'll basically say it, given the little picture that Google shared. And this is obviously running on Android 12. And Pixel phones will have Android 12 from day one. The Pixel 6 especially, able to get Android 12 right out of the gate. And I think that's really cool nonetheless. Now, aside from that, the design's interesting. It's a little better with a matte finish. The Tensor chip is promising with AI functionality. We'll see how fast it is when they talk about it at their Made by Google launch event in October. I feel it'll be in October. Hopefully the chip shortages do sort of lessen, the effects do lessen, that they will have sufficient supplies of these phones. Let's see how much they're able to pump out, how much supply there'll be in the market for these phones when it comes out in October. But interestingly, it won't be available in around the world. Google's sort of stated that the Pixel 6 series will be available in a few select countries, so US, UK, Japan, Germany, I believe. I don't exactly know, but basically in Europe, US, and Japan, and Australia, where Google has already been selling phones and devices. It won't be coming to places like the Middle East or India or Pakistan or other or Southeast Asia, where people are wanting to buy premium phones and phones with stock Android experience, which I think is interesting. I think it's just Google. I mean, they can't really figure out how to sell phones or devices in those other regions, and you'll have to buy it from a third-party retailer or from the black market, and it'll be a significant markup nonetheless. So yeah. But can't wait to see what Google has in store for the Pixel 6 and 6 Pro. It'll be interesting to see what they have in store. It'll probably be interesting, to say the least. But honestly, Google ditching Snapdragon chips is quite interesting, seeing their priorities here, nonetheless. Alrighty, moving on. Realme showed off something interesting 2 days ago that we kind of mentioned last week because obviously it got leaked once again. Because, you know, some secrets are not well kept in the tech world, they kind of get out. The word goes out easily, and Realme has officially shown off its magnetic charging technology called MagDart, and they showed it off as an interesting innovation that they're going to offer for their phones and obviously upcoming phones. And there's no information about whether they'll offer it for the C series or the X series of devices or the GT, but they showed off this magnetic charging technology, which essentially is wireless charging, and they add magnets to allow faster charging. Now, I'm sure they are now, the way they've explained it is that they've added magnets to the whole game to allow you to quickly charge your phone wirelessly. And so when wireless charging has issues because if your phone gets bumped around, it no longer starts charging. There's more heat in the game. So, but that's not really an issue. Realme has essentially created MagDart, and it's kind of the answer to Apple's MagSafe technology, where and it, the, now how I'm going about it is this is wireless charging, but they're adding magnets to the game to keep the phone in contact and allow you to charge pretty quickly without a problem. They create a concept phone to show off this idea called the Realme Flash, which, as the name implies, allows you to do magnetic charging. And the way it works is that on top of the back of the phone, the base, you have a protective layer for protecting the wireless charger, along with the magnetic coil, along with the Qi coil that you have, the Qi charging coil, and magnets, almost in a similar fashion to what you see on the iPhone 12 with the MagSafe system, in order, for the looks of it. If we zoom in to the picture, that is, if it opens up, as that's assuming my laptop stops getting stuck because, you know, battery power is. Anyways, so you have a safety barrier board along with a 0.2 millimeter super thin coil wireless charger and boron and cobalt magnets combined together to create a MagDart charger that sits on the phone built in. This is on the Realme Flash. This is a concept like the other Realme phones, and it won't be permanently be coming out in the future, obviously. But if you want MagDart technology, Realme is offering a case for the GT that you can get separately, and that has the MagDart module and a fully functioning USB-C port that sort of is like a elevated lip, so you can open it up and plug it in if you want, so it won't obstruct your USB-C port primarily. And obviously features a carbon fiber finish, so it looks pretty sporty and cool looking like the GT itself. But obviously you need a charger to utilize this functionality, and Realme have designed two chargers for using MagDart technology that do wireless charging magnetically. One is a 50 watt chunky, big chungus as I like to say, the chunky 50 watt MagDart charger that charges very quickly, over 50 watts. So this is almost the spec of Qi charging, fast charging on via Qi, that it at 50 watts. And then there is a thin, a incredibly thin 3.9 millimeter 15 watt fast charger. It's incredibly fast compared, almost comparable to MagSafe that Apple uses, which runs at 15 up to 15 watts. But primarily, it charges at up to 15 watts in this one from Realme. Interestingly, it is ridiculously thin because it takes out the charging component and heating and all. It's really, really thin, so you won't be able to feel it. But the USB-C port with which you plug the charger in you plug it into a charger and it brings in power. That has the board, that has the charging circuitry right on there instead of being on the coil, wireless charging coil, which I think is interesting. And I bet that's how they achieved such a small form factor. And obviously, Realme have shown off a bunch of new products that that obviously utilize MagDart. I'm trying not to say MagSafe, but it kind of is like that. But trying to utilize a MagSafe MagDart technology, including a pop-on accessory, which has a ring up as a pop-out ring light, so you could, you know, eliminate your selfies without needing to use the phone's, you know, white screen, and a wallet accessory, a power bank attachment, and yeah, and but the thing is, the way you now Realme Flash is a concept phone. The GT is the first phone to offer a case with MagDart technology. Now it's yet we've yet to see, or Realme is yet to say what phone will have this built in. I'm sure it's a technology that Realme is looking to make it theirs. No other brand could hold claims to it that they invented magnetic wireless charging. It is quite a fascinating idea. It's quite promising. So they've shown off these products. They've shown off that they're capable of doing this. Magnetic wireless charging could let you charge the phone incredibly quickly. We're yet to see whether this will come over to a Realme phone sometime in the future, whether this will be on a Narzo or X series or a C series phone. It'd be interesting to see if they offer it on more phones than just a case attachment for the GT. Seems like this is going to be like a one-off, but hopefully they do make this a standout feature. It could help Realme distinguish themselves in the market. We really need some differentiators. They gotta be more than just a Redmi competitor, honestly, if you think about it. So that's how it is with MagDart. So even though this is copying MagSafe, I think this has some promise here. It could be a unique selling point for Realme. It could be the thing they're looking for to differentiate themselves from the competition primarily. So I think there's something to watch out on. So hopefully they do bring it to more and more phones, and I think more people will experience the wonders of magnetic wireless charging. I think Realme is all about opening up access to such cool gadgetry to phone more folks. So yeah, hopefully they do get to doing that, and it would be great to see MagDart on other phones. I mean, it's a nice to have, honestly, if you think about it. This next one's for all my Mi fanboys. If you've been really an OG Xiaomi fan, not some new Redmi phone owner, if you've been an OG Xiaomi fan, you will remember, and I'm sure I remember very well, the Mi Mix series, where Xiaomi really used to pack some of its cutting edge innovation, and used to be some of its most premium phones that you could buy on the market. And now they're coming back at it with the Mi Mix 4. And finally, there's going to be an event for this phone. On August 10th, next week pretty much, on August 10th, Lai Jun, Xiaomi CEO, will show off the Mi Mix 4, and according to a leaker, the Mi Pad 5 series, which has been, we've missed the Mi Pad, actually. I mean, Xiaomi's kind of answered the iPad, but it's been ages since we've seen the Mi Pad 5, probably. But now is an interesting time for these phones to come out. The Mi Mix 4 especially. We all know what the Mi Mix 4 could pack. It'll be the first phone from Xiaomi to offer an under-display camera. And under-display cameras are quite an exciting innovation nonetheless. Interestingly enough, the event's happening at 7:30 p.m. China Standard Time. So that'll essentially be 4:30 Pakistan time, or 3:30, roughly, give or take. So that's going to be exciting to watch, and probably, yeah, I mean, probably in the afternoon also. No, it says, yeah, probably in the afternoon too, interestingly. The event will cover Xiaomi's recent good news and focus on Jun's 10 most difficult choices over the course of the company's existence. Now, obviously, people may or may not know this pretty much. Lai Jun, Xiaomi's CEO and founder, is a bit of a celebrity in China, so much so that the Mi 11 series, he kind of... was kind of a brand ambassador for the phones, and it's kind of interesting, kind of unique. I don't think we've seen this amongst Chinese phone brands, that the CEO is so revered and such a celebrity that everyone admires, that they're sort of the face of the brand. It's very rare. It doesn't happen. It's not every day that you see a brand that's so good and so popular that and so successful that its CEO is endorses the product. You see his face on the billboards. Normally, you see music stars or reality stars that endorse those products, but you see a CEO of a tech company endorse a tech product. Now, that's what I call nerds going. That's quite a nerdy moment. Anyways. But the Mi Mix 4 is coming out on August 10th, and we can't wait to see what the pack brings to the table. It could be the first phone with a Snapdragon 888 Plus. It can. Why not? That'd be wonderful. But we've seen a leaked video that was shared on Weibo that sh hap from Digital Chat Station, good old Digital Chat Station, that's the translated name, showing off the display. Now, it shows off, now it doesn't show a lot, but it's under display ca the way it's on display cameras that there's a little that the whole display is lit up, and when it's switched off, the camera hole exists or it pops out, sort of it's there, so electrically it goes over the hole, and when the phone screen is on, so you could see the camera. You can't see the camera at all, if you know what I'm talking about. So it's kind of interesting. That's Xiaomi's approach, ironically. Now, the person was also sort of bending the display, which means that it'll also be a flexible AMOLED display. It won't be a foldable by any means of the imagination, but it could possibly be it could be thin and light to pack the display in and of itself. So that's interesting, nonetheless. We gotta talk about under-display cameras, and I think the interesting part here is that the technology is advancing dramatically, and also compared to when it came out sort of last year on the Exxon, and now I forgot which phone from ZTE, I think the Exxon 20 probably. And the thing about it is now, I think it was the Ultra, yeah, probably, and now it's improved dramatically in that we have a that. The technology is dramatically improved compared to the first. We're now in second generation of under-display camera technology, where the display has basically been tweaked so much that also the camera's improved primarily, so you could see a little bit more clarity compared to the first generation cameras. But I'll say that. But yeah, aside from that, Samsung is going to come out with the Z Fold 3 that has an under-display camera. Xiaomi is obviously coming out with the Mi Mix 4, and that for sure is coming with an under-display camera primarily. ZTE has already launched a phone of its own, the Exynos 35G, which has an under-display camera. And as I was mentioning, it ha it it's second-gen tech. Apparently, it sort of now has more in its typical 2. Instead of a 2.24 micrometer pixel, you have 1.12 micrometer pixels, so that you get able the camera able to shoot through the display without a problem. The display would turn off in OLED, so you're able to blast through and see it. According to ZTE, the under display camera, it's second generation and features a 7-layer structure with higher transmittance materials, a UDC Pro screen display chip, so able to tweak the display and sort of turn off that black, so you could the camera can run through without a problem, and an ACE circuit arrangement. And apparently, it g gets you more light to the sensor, resulting in improved image clarity compared to the last year's solution. And yes, the selfie camera has 4-in-1 pixel binning, which is surprising. Not that we'd probably, we'd need it, but it's interesting. I've seen a sample of it. It's a little bit better. It's a tad bit better. It's like 30 or 40% better than the current under-display camera technology. Primarily, Oppo has a prototype already that they've shown off with the second-generation technology that they've created. Now, the way it's sort of been made, and Oppo's explained how the second-gen tech has wor is working. So, first thing to note is that this display for the phone was made with BOE, a big display manufacturer in China, well known in the world of smartphones in China. So they make a lot of displays for phones. And interestingly, the companies both developed an innovative pixel geometry that shrinks the size of each pix every pixel, each and every pixel, in the area over the camera lens, reaching 400 ppi. So that area around the potential selfie camera, overall the pixels are not that big. It shrinks a bit so the light can pass through from the camera sensor out into the real world, and you're able to bring in more light pretty much. And interestingly, Oppo has also replaced the traditional screen wiring with transparent wiring material. So again, you're able to get through more light. They might have cut through it probably, you never know really. But they've kind of worked to make that area of the display. Now, the interesting part is in the video that they have posted about this prototype. You weren't able to tell that part, you weren't able to tell if it's a block or a circle showing as a camera, a selfie camera. It's almost invisible. And I think it's impressive, primarily. The fact that they've been able to offer, they have extremely sharp area sort of around the top display where the camera is. That means that, on top of that, there is a new solution, you could say. I'm reading this on forward here. Each circuit driving only one pixel, and it's kind of working together with precise algorithmic compensation. So you can have the brightness of the entire display can be controlled with a deviation of about 2%. And that kind of means that the overall display has improved a lot, that you could accurately see smaller fonts. It won't be distorted a little bit compared to before. And interestingly enough, the selfie camera, it's also gotten some AI algorithms so that the glare and blurriness is cut out from the under display camera. This is just a prototype from Oppo. It's not a final product. It won't come out. Might come on a future phone. Oppo doesn't have that many premium phones, so it could come out next year, or a year after that, or maybe at the end of this year there could be a phone from Oppo that has this technology. But basically, I might have not probably explained this display tech, but honestly, the tweaks they've done probably have given two things. You have a display where the camera notch is not that visible. The light difference, you don't see a light difference. You don't see a lighter part of a display. It's completely, when it's extremely bright, it's completely bright from top to bottom. There's no kind of ghosting that there's a selfie camera, you're able to tell. And secondly, there's less distortion than usual with that selfie camera. You see, it's just a normal photo as if you got it from a cheaper phone. And so that's interesting nonetheless. So, honestly, I don't know about you, but this is exciting. This is exciting technology. The fact that we're moving ahead at such a dramatic pace, that there is such stuff coming very quickly, and we're going to see two whole production phones with this technology. Now, I've seen a picture on Twitter, and I mentioned it earlier, where they put all those four phones side by side. Samsung's solution is showing, clearly is on first generation technology, where the camera hole is visible because of a lighter area. I don't know how they're able to fix that, but maybe the next iteration they're gonna completely alleviate it. And it's exciting to see all this innovation. You know, you gotta give credit where it's due. It's extremely exciting nonetheless. And speaking of Z Fold 3 and the Z Flip 3, it's coming out next week. And we've already heard quite a lot about these phones. Almost to the point that almost everything's kind of like confirmed. Almost, we kind of know it's all coming. Unpacked on August 11th, will basically feature the Z Fold 3, Z Flip 3, the watch, the Galaxy Watch 3, hopefully, the Buds 2. So much so that the Galaxy Buds 2, the unboxing video is on YouTube already up, where people have unboxed it and have even tested it out, which is crazy. I mean. Now Samsung needs to unveil them officially on August 11th, and but interestingly enough, we got even more details about these phones. The Z Flip 3 hopefully could come with 25 watt fast charging, and that could help sell it well. The thing is, the Z Flip 3 will probably be around $1,000, so it's standard, right? This should be available on every phone, right? 25 watt fast charging. And you kind of know it has a slightly smaller battery, kind of spread on the bottom half on a device. That's why if you keep it, if you keep it upright, then sort of it doesn't fall off or something. It's not that wibbly wobbly. But you have a 3,300 milliamp hour battery potentially, and that means that it'll be much faster than usual because it's a smaller battery for fill. So they could stick with 10 watt charging or something that could fit the appropriately small battery, but 25 watts will feel incredibly fast for those who have the phone because it's small, quite compact phone already. I mean, this phone also looks really cool. But I honestly want to get this on top of an Poco F3 though. This could be my second or third phone if I could buy a lot of phones. This phone I'd definitely buy and keep for myself. And it would be a cool statement piece because, and also, it's going to be more refined than the Z Flip, the original Z Flip that came out last year. But yeah, it's looking to be quite a showstopper phone when it does get announced on August 11th. So yeah, can't wait for this to be unfolded and unpacked, quite literally. If you know what I'm talking about, that is. But on top of that, there is already a lot of, as I said, all devices you could say have almost got leaked, but with the Galaxy Watch 4, not the 3, there's already information about it that we really didn't know much about that we now know. To start with, the Galaxy Watch 4 is going to be 44 or 44 millimeters in overall length, overall screen size, and the Watch 4 Classic will be a little bit bigger at 42 millimeters and 46 millimeters, respectively. In terms of specifications, now both will use, if we just go over to the specs page, which will tell give us an idea. Now the smaller variant of the two watches has a 1.19 inch display with 386 by 396 pixels, 330 PPI, the Exynos W920 chip that's also on the bigger size variants, a 247 milliamp hour battery, weighs the original the Watch 4 weighs around 225.9 grams primarily. It's not that heavy, and on top of that you have Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, NFC, GPS, GLONASS, Baidu, Galileo, and 4G is optional, along with 1.5 gigabytes of RAM and 16 gigabytes of storage, and runs Wear OS, Android Wear OS by Google, plus One UI Watch 3.5. The display is Super AMOLED, features Gorilla Glass DX certification, a heart rate sensor, blood oxygen sensor, and all your typical fitness tracking that's out there. So it's on both models, but the bigger watches are roughly 450 by 450 pixels, the same pixel density, which I think is impressive nonetheless. And you get optional 4G like the Galaxy watches in question. Okay, yeah, now it's coming here. So the Galaxy Watch 4 Classic is going to have a classical designs in the name, in that it has a stainless ring around it. So it's classy in a sense, and comes in silver, it comes in white and black, obviously, pretty cool colors to go with. And then Galaxy Watch 4 will be a bit more sporty, with just two side buttons on the side, and just this simple round display. The Watch 4 Classic has a rotary dial, which will be on this watch, like the other previous watches. Now, interesting enough, the Galaxy Watch 4 will be capable of MLD, as you say, the STD 810G certification. As I said, it has Bluetooth, GPS, Wi-Fi, NFC, 4G is optional as always, but it's running Wear OS by Google, as we've already known about this, and I think it's kind of interesting to say the least. So aside from a few differences, it's a pretty big display nonetheless, and it's a pretty exciting update to Galaxy Watches nonetheless. And interestingly, and I think people forget to realize, Again, thanks to all these leaks, we're finding out more and more details about these devices. You can run either Bixby or Google Assistant on the Galaxy Watch 4 and 4 Classic, which I think is kind of interesting nonetheless. And you could pick your voice assistant, which I think is really, really awesome regardless. So it's kind of exciting depending on who you ask in general. And finally, now if you're wondering which is the cheapest EV in the US to buy at the moment, and you're probably sitting there thinking, it could be the Tesla Model 3, but that's actually even more expensive than this. Guess what? You'll be surprised to know, for the 2022 model, the Nissan Leaf will start at a rough cost of $28,375. Now, this essentially makes it the cheapest EV available in the US, and that's before incentives and, cuts, incentives and all that, taxes and incentives, where that price will pretty much go down. And the other, and this is for the base spec, and the other trim, which is the SV, starts at $29,775, a $6,135 price cut. And then there's the plus variant, which has a more powerful motor and 226 miles of range, that starts at $33,375, and obviously, the most expensive variant is just 30. $8,375 with all the loaded functionality, given you have longer range and all that kind of stuff. But starting out, this car will pretty much cost $28,375, which makes it under 30,000, which makes it one of the cheapest EVs to buy in the US. So now the thing about Nissan Leaf, it's been around for a while, and it's been available for a long enough time. So Nissan probably makes the competition growing, and decided to lower the price a bit to get those sorts of consumers who've been looking to get an EV but haven't really thought of an option until now. So, interestingly, a CHAdeMO charger is standard on all Leaf models, which is interesting to say the least. And but the thing is, you won't be able to find them that much compared to the CCS chargers, which you find on most chargers out there. I think it's the battery. That I'm sure maybe the components have gone down cost a bit for Nissan to bring that to pass on the savings to consumers, because and also probably the competition. There's so much competition. Tesla is in the game, you could say, and I mean Tesla's could launch a $20,000 car, and that could absolutely tank the Leaf's market. And also, Nissan's about to drop its own electric SUV, the which we've talked about last year. That's yet to come out next, obviously next year, given that the chip shortages go away, then it'll probably come out this year, later this year or next year, pretty much, the Ariya. And so Nissan's trying to have a differentiator, pretty much, by offering the Leaf at a slightly lower price, around $30,000, so to differentiate it from the Ariya, primarily. So it's kind of interesting times ahead. I think the chip shortages probably aren't slowing down the release of EVs, most likely. But if they do go away, then you might see more and more EVs in the market potentially. So that's exciting nonetheless. But yeah, aside from that, honestly, this took me the entire day to record because the laptop keeps getting stuck or frozen, or something or some random errand kick comes in the middle. But yeah, aside from that, what do you think of everything I've heard today? Let me know on Instagram and Twitter. I'm at say_my199. Follow me there if you can. Subscribe to the show so you don't miss another episode. Please read a review on Apple Podcasts if you can. Share the show to your friends and family. It takes a lot of effort to make this and a lot of perseverance, pretty much. A computer that keeps getting stuck and everything in the middle. But yeah, that's been it. Thank you for listening. And, till Saturday, till Tuesday, till next week. This is your boy Marvin signing out. Peace. Have a wonderful day. And yeah, thanks for listening. Take care. Ciao.